Listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If your wardrobe is looking for a little spiffing up in the new year, don't worry. Civic Media's got you covered. You want to get some AUK gear? That's the place I broadcast out of. Just go to civicmedia.us/. Go to the upper right-hand corner. We got a store there. You can buy all kinds of cool casual gear to celebrate your love or distaste for Civic Media. It'll be a conversation starter either way. My special guest co-host, which you can find with me here every Thursday, is Tom Paulswitz, one of the most reasonable men in politics, small business owner, Navy veteran, and two-time congressional candidate, and the notoriously tough nut to crack congressional 5th District.
Tom, impossible. Yeah.
So glad to be here with you, especially given your shared service to the U.S. Navy with President Carter, whom we're probably going to spend the rest of today talking about. I wanted to ask you specifically about that. And, you know, we've had a series of presidents who haven't served in the military of late, and yet presidents serve as the commander in chief. Our incoming president, by multiple accounts, has derided the military, disrespected armed service members. As someone who served and someone who has run for elected office and served in the very branch that Jimmy Carter served in, what are some of your thoughts in this moment as it relates to the president's relationship with the armed forces?
Yeah, and I'm actually going to go back because Jimmy Carter was also in the Submariner service.
I was just going to say the only president ever certified to be a Submariner.
Right. And what people don't understand, though, is he was in the submarine service the same time Admiral Rickover was creating the nuclear submarine service. And he was instrumental. He was at the ground floor in putting systems together and putting the strategy together to be able to create a nuclear Navy, because it had never been done, obviously. But I think the biggest thing was, and I think this is a testament to who Jimmy Carter is he always looked at the long term. Everything he did, he looked at what is this going to be out into the future, not what's most expedient, not what's, you know, right in front of me. And, you know, I don't think that's just a military trait, but in the military, it served him well to be looking at how are we going to build this nuclear Navy, this nuclear submarine force that, one, you know, we can then have we can project out military strength around the world, but also protect the people who are on the submarine from deadly radiation. I mean, just fascinating thinking about how that was, you know, the beginning of that was. He was actually slated to go on the second nuclear submarine, the Seawolf, which was being built in 1953. And at that time, his father had passed away and he basically left the Navy to go run his peanut farm. But he took that consistency and that level of commitment, but also service, and applied it to everything else that he did in his life. And I think that's the, you know, one thing that military teaches people. You know, there are other ways to learn it, but it's the service for others. It's understanding that your role is not about you. It's about helping others get what they need in order to be able to achieve what they want. And, you know, and you and I have talked about this. That is not who Donald Trump is. Everything's about him. You know, so I'm not even going to bring him up in this context, because I think Jimmy Carter, his life is worth remembering. It's worth celebrating. Because he is going to go down, maybe not as one of the greatest presidents we've ever had, but one of the greatest people who ever served as president.
A great American,
And then did all these other, you know, if he would have done just one of the things, he would be remembered. But just his entire life was spent in the service of others.
One of the very lesser known facts about Jimmy Carter is that he actually once spent 89 seconds in a melting nuclear reactor, which is like
turned a screw.
Yeah, what?
Like he turned one screw, right? Because that was the length of time You know, and I wish I would have known that, because one of my nuclear stories was, I remember laying on top of the nuclear reactor, changing the fluorescent light bulb above it. Obviously, the reactor was shut down at the time. But, you know, just precautions that you had to go through in order to be able to do those
things. Yes.
We're all learning on the fly, because nobody knew exactly how much radiation.
Yeah, how much Tom, we're having a little bit of trouble hearing you. Cardi, are you picking that up as well? We'll just give it a minute for your internet hookup to reconnect. I wanted to talk about one of the observations that our last guest, Joe Czarnecki, and again, my big thanks to Joe for joining us, who had met with President Carter many times throughout his lifetime. And he remarked upon Carter's statements that I'll never lie to you. There was a fascinating, critical memorial written by George Will. I believe it was in the Washington Post. And George Will took issue and sort of claimed that Jimmy Carter's, that the elements of his character, his commitment to character and truth-telling, was sort of a put-on, almost a pomposity, if you will. And yes, what I found fascinating about George Will's criticisms, and he said, no, Jimmy Carter lied, and these were his lies, okay? So again, big thing from Jimmy Carter is, I will always tell you the truth, I will never lie. And George Will took exception to that as part of this greater criticism of Jimmy Carter. But the only two lies that George Will could point out was, he claimed in his piece that Jimmy Carter had said that he was a nuclear physicist. I haven't been able to verify that.
Never claimed it.
It comes in the context of what you were talking about. He was one of the, on the forefront of the vanguard of this evolution of our military might, of our Navy. And the second lie that George Will claimed was that Carter had denied that he had derided Lyndon Johnson as a liar. And he said a tape proved that Carter had called Lyndon Johnson lying, cheating, and distorting the truth. It is highly ironic to me. It just smacks of all of these bizarre levels of weirdness. Like, first of all, if your two lies were about what is an indisputable military record of service and an evolving, hugely important element of our military strength and might, and the other one is about a private conversation had with respect to another president's propensity to tell the truth or lack thereof, if those are the two big lies that Jimmy Carter told, like, I'll take it. I wish that those were the lies that... That was the extent of the lying by every single president. Like, are you freaking kidding me? I just thought that that was incredibly
odd. But
that
was the beginning of the idea of normalizing.
Yes.
Right? The more you can normalize the idea that all the politicians lie, then the bigger lies make more sense. And they're no longer lies. They're just opinions, or that's just the way he speaks, or that's just how he feels about the situation. Right? So that, and that's been going on for a number of years. And that's why, you know, when I asked Joe about that question, like, you know, how did the Republican Party, how were they able to paint Jimmy Carter as weak when he had done, you know, he had done some amazing things during his presidency, but he didn't attack Iraq, you know, Iran after the hostage situation.
Yeah.
And I think that just infuriated people who wanted something done.
Yes.
And, you know, but I think that both siderisms is something that's been going on forever. And if you can take somebody who said, I never lie, and paint them as a liar, well, then whatever you're saying, all the lies that you're, you know, spreading out there are palatable because everybody does it.
Well, and I think, you know, Joe spoke to, and one of the reasons that I think, especially some on the more conservative end of the spectrum, find Carter to be an easy target is because he was, during his presidency, largely sort of reviled even by the Democratic Party machine. He was not liked within the Beltway. He did not play congressional politics well. All of and he was sort of like the anti-politician, because, you know, the truth telling, all of this, he just was not well liked amongst the political establishment. It occurs to me today that if you want to talk about presidents that actually support economically progressive policies and believe in the middle class, Carter would stand out as that. He wasn't far left, but what he believed in were these fundamental things, the equal treatment of people under the law, women's rights. He, when the church that he belonged to in Plains, Georgia, refused to admit black members, he and a bunch of friends were like, fine, we're leaving. We're going to start our own church, yes, and did so. I mean, that is extraordinary. He appointed the first black person to ever be ambassador to the UN, the importance of housing, the environment. You can go on and on. These are things that truly have a direct benefit to regular working Americans. It strikes me again as an incredible historical juxtaposition that he was not liked within the political elite class, whether you are a Democratic elite, yes, again, symbolized, as Joe mentioned, by the elite of the elite in the Democratic Party, the Kennedy family.
The right? Kennedys were so upset. Huh? Right, that Ted ran, right? And you know, he made the presidential, he made the White House accessible to normal people because he was a normal person. Lived in a $170,000 house his entire life, right? Yeah. $167,000 house his entire life. He said and he did things that helped ordinary people. Yes. And you're right. He was then vilified by both sides and didn't have a chance in 1980. And here we are today, because that election was a key swing point in our country.
Truly.
You know, and I always have to, you know, I fess up to this because I did vote for Ronald Reagan in 1980. I was 18 years old. It was my first election. And I bought into this idea that we needed strength and we needed to combat the Soviet Union. And what a terrible disaster that was. Mm. And, you know, so many things happened from there. But the kindness, the warmth, the compassion that somebody like Jimmy Carter brought to politics is something I hope someday we can get back to.
One of the enduring messages that I think Jimmy Carter stands for very clearly, and there are many. There are many excellent character traits and values that Jimmy Carter's life as a whole embodied. But one that I think, whether you are more conservative or liberal, no matter how you may have voted in 1980 or in 2024, that is unquestionably an American ideal, is that Jimmy Carter was a poor kid from a peanut farm in a tiny, tiny little town in Georgia, and he became President of the United States. That is unquestionably the best of us, the best expression of both the American promise, the American dream, and what democracies should help to foster and bring about. Folks, we ask you to join Tom and I. Your thoughts, complicated, your criticisms, whether we agree with them or not, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Again, this is quite a moment. When we come back, we're going to go to the text lines. We're going to go to the phones. And before we get out of today's show, I have been trying to keep a running sort of rough sketched out list of all of the causes that Jimmy Carter's life moved forward exponentially, causes that are universal values that the vast majority of Americans and humans stand behind. To me, nonpartisan causes that basically make life better for all of us, that Jimmy Carter fundamentally improved. Special guest co-host today, Tom Paulswitz, himself a former Navy veteran, himself a former submariner. He's joining me every Thursday. You can catch us always here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us as we revisit the legacy of President Jimmy Carter, who today had his state funeral earlier this morning, a funeral planned in every detail by President Carter, because I have this characteristic in common with the president, maybe the only one. A little anal retentive about the details. So we're going to come back, continue this discussion. Join us all, because we're all about real news and great conversation here on the Civic Media Radio Network. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Keep it locked, y'all. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm a bad, bad, bad.